My name is Pete Tobin. I've been in law enforcement for 45 years. Back in 1984, I took the life of a young man who was involved in an armed robbery.
Every 4th of July, former Columbus Police SWAT officer Pete Tobin relives that fatal shooting of the 18-year-old man. Though he was protecting the life of the clerk in the carryout that night, he wonders what the man would be doing if he'd lived. And he carries the pain of the parents who lost a son. The Columbus Dispatch is telling the stories of several people who took someone's life. I'm Dispatch reporter Erica Thompson, and in this podcast episode, you will hear Officer Tobin recount his experience in his own words. He shares why he acted so quickly and what it was like to face a grand jury. To support journalism like this, subscribe to the Columbus Dispatch at dispatch.com/subscribe.
I was a member of the Columbus SWAT platoon, and a large part of our duties is to either arrest people committing armed robberies or to lay in wait for them and catch them in the act. I probably did 600 or 700 hours a year of robbery stakeouts all over Columbus. I staked out a Colonel Sanders place, and they robbed every Colonel Sanders around me and never came to my store. And that's just the way stakeouts go. The success rate is very small. It's almost like luck. There was two Koreans who had bought this small carryout called Eakin Road Market. The man took the daylight shift, and the woman had to take the late shift, or the midwatch shift. And she was robbed, I believe, 3 times in a period of 10 days. And the same suspect had robbed a gas station just down the street. So just a matter of time before something would go terribly wrong, and they asked us to get out there and try to catch this guy. We entered the store, briefly told the woman at the register, the Korean woman, what we were there for. She was very wide-eyed, very worried, given traumatized 3 times already. And to think that they would come back again, it was just almost too much for her. We told her what we'd like her to do. Please raise your hands and say, please don't hurt me, and say it loud. Do you understand? And she nodded. So we found a stack of those milk crates, the stackable milk crates that hold the four gallons of milk, and they have the word I'm looking for, they're you could see right through them in different holes of the plastic, and we stacked them up so that we were by the back room, just outside the back door, and we would be able to sit on a stool and see the counter, a little sliver of the door, but potato chip racks on both sides. And so we had a very limited vision of the woman behind the register, but it was good enough to be able to know positively that an armed robbery was occurring. And we got in there at about 7. We took turns sitting on that stool. And while one of us was sitting on that stool, we could not take our eyes off of that for 1 second, because these things happen so fast. And sometimes they're so subtle that you don't even know that a robbery is occurring. So my partner took the first shift. I took the third shift, and it was dark, quite dark. And I'm peering out, and I hear this woman up front screaming. And he was in there. I could see his arm and the semi-automatic pistol he had in his hand. I could see him start to climb over the counter after her. She had dove on the floor, absolutely hysterical. And he started over the counter after her, and I said, that's not going to happen, and I shot him. He died instantly. Now, I've had a number of these things, these robberies happen to me. I've always given out a warning. Throw the gun down. That's what we need to do. It's dangerous to offer that opportunity for the bad guy, but it wasn't written, but it was expected that we give a warning. In this case, I did not have time. If he had not started over the counter, we might have been able to talk him out of it, drop the gun. But it happened so quickly, and it was over in a couple seconds. The thing that bothered me about this case was that I never gave the guy a chance to give up, and I've carried that with me. And there was an article in the paper about the shooting, and they quoted the mother of this young man as saying, "They sat waiting for my son and they executed him." And that's pretty much what happened. Not because I could control it, because that extra time to give this guy a chance to give up didn't exist. I had to act immediately. And I tried to tell myself all my life that I didn't have a choice. But you live with it. This happened on 4th of July, by the way. And every 4th of July, I remember that incident vividly. And it's tough. And this guy could have grown up to be somebody. You know, after some prison time, some serious prison time, he might have pulled his life together and gone on. And so, and of course, the remorse I have for the family, for the particularly for the mother who was in the paper, is awful. That her life was just ripped apart like that. So it's there, and it doesn't go away very soon. I had a duty to protect that woman who was standing behind that counter every night. And she had been through all kinds of hell, and I'm sure that she never recovered from the different ordeals she went through during these robberies. And I went back a few years later, and the carryout had changed hands, and I never was able to talk to that woman again, but I'm sure that she also carries this thing with her. She was wide-eyed when she finally got up. I had to go and get her up, and she was just shaking and just torn up. So she went through a lot more than I did, obviously, and I hope she's okay. The robbery squad and the homicide squad and the internal affairs and the prosecutor's office all have hours and hours to deliberate about what you did and to pick it apart. They want to know every single thing you did. And if they think that you've done something wrong, shame on you. The public outcry is also something that is absolutely, it's really unnerving. The grand jury is a process that is, I was always very nervous when I appeared in front of a grand jury. They ask questions that sometimes you don't expect. In this particular case, I was asked by a woman on the grand jury, "Do you mean to tell me you shot him and he hadn't fired at you?" And I said, "No, ma'am, I did not. I didn't have time to do anything but take him out. And if any one of you had been behind that register, behind that counter, I would have done the same for you. It was my job to protect you. It would be my job to protect you in this instance. And I hope you can appreciate that. I had no choice." The grand jury deliberated for 2 minutes, I think, and they were done. I was cleared.
To read more about Pete Tobin and the stories of others in our series, visit dispatch.com/I took a life.